Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Chris Stegall sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. The phone number, 800-449-8255, 800-449-8255. Michael, thanks again for the opportunity. Michael taking a deservedly needed day off, and I'm grateful you're here. 800-449-8255, the phone number. As we head into the weekend, and big headline this afternoon, just as we come on the air here, that Hugo Chavez of Venezuela... He's calling on his pal Barack Obama to join him in socialism. Join him. So this was just moments ago before we came to air here. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez calling upon Barack Obama to follow the path to socialism, which he termed as the only way out of the global recession. Come with us, align yourself, come with us on the road to socialism. This is the only path. Imagine a socialist revolution in the United States. Imagine. I don't know... If Chavez has been paying attention, but it seems we're going that way without his cheerleading. But anyway, Chavez is speaking to a group of workers in southern Venezuela. The controversial leader who... Controversial leader, they're reporting him. Who's this, the AP? Of course, controversial leader. As though there are many... Well, of course, in his own country. You know, they look at the rigged polling in Venezuela. Controversial. That's, you know, it's like calling a Klansman in the United States controversial. Anyway, taunts the United States as a source of capitalistic evil under former President George W. Bush. Now, you say, Chris, why are you starting the show talking about Hugo Chavez and what he says about, so what? So a guy in Venezuela calls on Barack Obama to join the socialist movement. Chavez says people calling Obama a socialist today for the measures of state intervention he's taking to counter the crisis... So it would not be too far-fetched to suggest that he might join the prospect of 21st century socialism. You hear it? Hugo Chavez is basically admitting, acknowledging, he sees where we're headed. Policies coming out of Washington already indicate that's exactly where we're headed. Chavez is happy about it, cheering him on. Our cheerleader to the south there. Nothing is impossible, he said. Who would have thought in the late 90s that the Soviet Union would disappear? No one, he said. That murderous, genocidal empire has to end. And someday, there has to come a leader who interprets the best of a people, who also include human beings who suffer, endure, weep, and laugh. Well, he thinks that guy is Obama. And I know you're still thinking, why are you bringing this guy up? Well, a little something struck my memory as I started the program today, reading this headline that Hugo Chavez is calling on Obama to join the 21st century movement of socialism that he loves so much. You may or may not remember a guy named Bill Ayers. Why am I bringing him up? Well, Bill Ayers and Hugo Chavez know each other quite well. Did you know that? Now, again, you may as well just leave the show right now if you're one of these people that will not entertain and has absolutely no willingness to understand or believe that Barack Obama and Bill Ayers are the closest of friends. If you don't accept or believe that, you are beyond reproach in terms of your own sensibilities and intellectual honesty. You're not to be dealt with or talked to. You just check out. Go somewhere else. I don't know what else to do with you, because if you can't acknowledge that, I mean, it's been chronicled, they've acknowledged it. Now, to the extent that they're tight and that they're close, I suppose we can discuss it and debate it. They'll deny it. But look, their history's chronicled. We know they're close. We know Bill Ayers has written a great many words that have come out of Barack Obama's mouth. We know their association is deep and wide and vast. But you go back to November 2006. Let's take this in order. Why is it interesting that Hugo Chavez is making an all-call to the United States and Barack Obama's White House to embrace socialism. Well, in 2006, go back to the City Journal, a Chicago publication, the City Journal, an education forum in Caracas, Venezuela, where Hugo Chavez, at his side, there he was, Bill Ayers, Obama's good friend and colleague for several years, proclaiming his support for the profound educational reforms underway in Venezuela under the leadership of President Chavez. I'm quoting now. This is Bill Ayers talking. "We share the belief that education is the motor force of revolution. I look forward to seeing how you continue to overcome the failings of capitalist education as you seek to create something truly new and deeply humane." Let me read that again. This is Bill Ayers, great personal friend of Barack Obama in Chicago in 2006 at an education summit next to Hugo Chavez, who just today made an all-call for Obama to embrace socialism. This is a quote again. "I look forward," Bill Ayers says to Chavez, "to seeing how you continue to overcome the failings of capitalist education as you seek to create something truly new and deeply humane." Now, there is ample evidence to believe that Ayers is, obviously for all the professional reasons we know to be true, tied to him this way, but analytically, intellectually, there's ample evidence to believe Barack Obama's book, his first book, Bill Ayers Was the Ghostwriter. There's ample evidence, and you can look it up. Just search it. Anyway, he concludes this speech in Venezuela, Bill Ayers, back in 2006, declaring Venezuela is poised to offer the world a new model of educational, humanizing, and revolutionary model whose twin missions are enlightenment and liberation. Then he chants. He ends the whole thing with "Viva Presidente Chavez," and leads the crowd in a chant. Now, where am I going with this? Okay, you say, okay, so you got a nut president down in Venezuela calling for socialism. All right, so we've got an affiliate, an associate, a nutball domestic terrorist, Bill Ayers, who we know is tied in some capacity. Now, depending, again, whether you want to believe it's deep or not, that's up to you. But again, the evidence sort of precedes any argument I'm going to make here. I mean, if you're not willing to hear it and acknowledge it, then your head's in the ground, and there's nothing I can do for you. You're an ostrich. But the fact of the matter is, this guy's a domestic terrorist. He's embracing Hugo Chavez publicly. This has been documented. So the relationship between these two is tight. Chavez and Ayers. So now let's take it another step further. Bill Ayers is a very good friend of Barack Obama. There is no question there. They did work together. There's no question there. They officed together. There's no question there. Now, when Hugo Chavez tells Barack Obama to follow the path to socialism, Chavez is saying in the story I just read to you, he knows that's the path Barack Obama's on. He loves it. He loves he's embraced it. He sees that's where they're headed already. Get on board the socialism train. Well, Ayers, Obama's good friend, again, very tight, lauds publicly, openly, often, Chavez for his embrace of socialism and his slapdown of capitalism. Bill Ayers and Hugo Chavez share the same politics. Bill Ayers and Obama share the same politics. Now, where does this lead us? One more interesting story. Do you recall before Barack Obama took to the White House, there was an issue of his BlackBerry? Do you notice how that just went away? Nobody talked about this. Barack Obama could not leave the BlackBerry. And for people that don't know what that is, the handheld device that basically allows you to communicate via email and things like that, text, whatever, without your computer. Well, that was Barack Obama's deal. That he was on the campaign trail all the time with it, couldn't part with it, made a big deal about how he couldn't part with it, loved it. The media thought it was cute. They wrote about it. And after he won, the press thought it was so cute. Oh, you're so addicted to your BlackBerry. What are you going to do with that BlackBerry? You can't use the BlackBerry. Why couldn't he use it? The Constitution, the Sunshine Laws in place, the freedom of press. BlackBerries are not traceable. They're not trackable. And when you become president of the United States, guess what? Everything you do, everything you say, all your meetings, all your phone calls, all your emails. George Bush, go look this up. George Bush stopped emailing his own daughters from his White House office very early on in his administration because it was public record. Even his email correspondence to his family and friends privately is public record. It's all to be documented. Well, Barack Obama had this BlackBerry. That's different. You can't track that kind of stuff. And guess what? There were real legal hassles trying to get around. How am I going to get to keep the BlackBerry? Obama worried about how he'd get to keep it. He got to keep it. I'll have to go back and look up the story, the legal wranglings they went through. I don't even know that there was much. I just remember, what are you going to do without it? He said, well, I don't know. We're trying to work it out. Boom. Surprise. All of a sudden, he keeps it. So don't forget this. Barack Obama's got the BlackBerry attached to the hip at all times. This is the first time in presidential history that a sitting United States president has had a communication device that is untraceable, untrackable, not monitored, not public record. Do you understand that? Nobody talks about it. It's as though it's not even important. Everything presidents of the United States ought to... Is Bob Woodward going to write a book about Obama's BlackBerry someday? Can we, after all we've read about this White House engaging in media blacklists, can we safely assume that these enterprising journalists like Woodward are going to write new books about the secret blacklists and the secret communique on BlackBerries between Obama and his staff and his administration? We don't know. We don't know what they're saying. It's not traceable. You can't find it. Now, you want to take this to the ultra-sinister level? Where do you want to take it? 800-449-8255. Who do you suppose he's talking to on that BlackBerry? Who does he want to keep on his hip, in his pocket, literally, on the BlackBerry? Who is it he can talk to, untraceable, by anyone and everyone, including the press, you and me? No one will ever get to see who he communicates with on that BlackBerry. Now, why would he want that kind of access, that kind of privacy, that kind of intimate communique? Who's he talking to? Certainly worth a discussion, it could be heirs. Isn't it worth a discussion? Isn't it possible? Isn't it possible that his friends back in Chicago, like Bill Ayers, might be someone he's talking to? Because after all, we cannot have White House records with a domestic terrorist on the line, on the hard line. We can't have email exchanges with a domestic terrorist from the president that's actually traceable through the Freedom of Information Act. Can't have it. Bill Ayers can't be seen going into the Oval Office. Bill Ayers can't be on phone logs. He can't be traced on email logs. Ah, but that's where a BlackBerry comes in. So that's what I've done here tonight on the Savage Nation. What do you think of that? 800-449-8255. 800-449-8255. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, 800-449-8255. Michael, again, thanks again for the opportunity to sit in tonight. Talking to Hugo Chavez, who calls for Obama and pure 21st century socialism. Embrace it, he says. Now, we've also established and we know full well that Bill Ayers, who is a Chicago connection and great friend, certainly has a past as a fundraiser and many, many other business partner, educator, mentor, contributing writer, perhaps a ghostwriter. Bill Ayers has publicly spoken, been with, talked up Hugo Chavez and socialism. We know this. So if you tie the three together, and I think it's a very plausible tie, at 800-449-8255, it seems to me you got yourself a connection. Now, here's what makes the connection extra interesting, and it's something nobody talks about, but I'm asking you. Whether or not you think this is crazy, are you comfortable with the idea the President of the United States and this BlackBerry, this new form of communication that no president has ever enjoyed before, it is a total connection to the outside world that is under a shroud of total secrecy at all times? Now, who do you think he's talking to? That's my question. Why does he need a BlackBerry? Why does he need the private personal communication that no one can trace, no one can track? The Freedom of Information Act does not apply. The press can't access. Who's he talking to if it's not guys like Ayers? Who is it? His grandmother's passed away in Hawaii, as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure anybody that needs to reach him can probably get through the Oval Office if they're family. Who is it? Chris, Chicago, Illinois, who probably knows a thing or two about Mr. Ayers, Mr. Obama, and that entire scene. Let's start with you on the Savage Nation. Chris, hello.
Hello, Chris. Yeah, I want to say, you know, you're right. I mean, I voted for Obama. Let's start off with that real quick. Number two, I'm turning into a conservative after watching Rush Limbaugh's last speech. Number three, he should not have a BlackBerry that no one can get the information from. That's wrong, and he should not have any tie to this Bill Ayers at all. But the biggest problem is Alan Greenspan starting this real estate market that crashed and destroyed our country, and these banks that are becoming part of this socialist problem in our government. The banks have really just destroyed this country, and they keep just taking money from our government, from our, you know, from our people, and it's getting out of control.
You know, and Chris, the thing is, the there was a proposition, a proposal at one point, and nobody likes any. I think most of us can agree, government intervention in terms of financial markets and these corrupt, you know, greedy Wall Street lending types who made these overzealous loans to people that couldn't afford them. I mean, there was a lot of graft going on at all levels. There's no question. I'm not absolving banks and Wall Street here. But it is amazing that that everyone is too big to fail. Everyone. Not just the president and the elected officials, but so too are these companies that now they're intending to bail out. Nobody can fail. Failure's not an option anymore. And so they'd created at one point this option, Chris, of formulating a bank, a centralized bank, to buy up toxic assets. They've done away with that now. They're just continuing to pump more and more of your money and my money into these failing institutions with the hopes that I guess it'll come around. Look at General Motors. They're going to do what? They just announced today or yesterday. They're going to do what? They're going to file bankruptcy most likely. After what? After the government said, oh, you're too big to fail, we got to pump taxpayer money into it. Now, I'm not picking on GM, Chris, but the fact of the matter is this model of continuing to take our money, rack up our debt, print more money, throw it at failing institutions who are in a tailspin, it's everything, Chris, we know about socialism. It is what Chavez is all about. You're absolutely right. And Obama's in charge now. And Chavez, guys like that know it. It's Obama's big show. And Chavez knows this guy is doing the bidding of what he's been doing down in Venezuela. This is a dream come true to so many in South America. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I'm still clinging to my BlackBerry. They're going to pry it out of my hands.
Well, are you in fact going to overcome this idea as anachronistic that presidents can't use the most modern?
Here's what I think I can get. I think I'm going to be able to get access to a computer somewhere. It may not be right in the Oval Office. The second thing I'm hoping to do is to see if there's some way that we can arrange for me to continue to have access to a BlackBerry. I know that
as of this moment, you still have your BlackBerry.
As of this moment, I still do. This is a concern, I should add, not just of Secret Service, but also lawyers. You know, this town's full of lawyers, if, I don't know if you've noticed, and they have a lot of opinions. So I'm still in a scuffle around that. But it's the hardest thing about being president. How do you stay in touch with the flow of everyday life?
There's Barack Obama defending the use of his private BlackBerry, something no president has ever enjoyed before, the private use of a communication device outside of the White House. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. Michael, thanks again for the opportunity to be here. The number, same for you on the Savage Nation, 800-449-8255. Town is full of lawyers, he said. No, actually, the town is filled with founding documents that say you're not free from scrutiny. You're a public servant. And we get to know what you're doing. And if lawyers happen to be there to help ensure transparency, President Obama, I don't know why you would object to that. Let me be snarky about it. All right, Mike's in Las Vegas. 800-449-8255. Mike, I'm Chris, in for Michael on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Yes, thanks. I wanted to have a couple of questions for you. I wanted to know, why do you think that because he wanted to keep his BlackBerry and have communication,
that is so evil and sinister? I mean, you know, it's necessarily not necessarily a great thing, but why do you think it's automatically evil or sinister, or there must be some kind of plot to destroy it? I mean, the question is that...
Well, let me take it in order. I want to take them in order. I don't want to get focused on too many questions at one time. Let me start with that. I didn't necessarily say that he's plotting sinister evil. I'm saying he's having private communication with people. And as the president of the United States, private communication with individuals is not a luxury that they get to enjoy as presidents of the United States. Transparency. Taxpayers have, and the voters of this country, Mike, as you just said, you didn't necessarily think it was a good thing. Transparency is critical. Wouldn't you agree when the president of the United States is involved in making decisions that affect our nation?
Yes, I do. But does him having a BlackBerry jeopardize that solidarity or whatever it is?
I wish I could tell you I knew. I wish I could tell you for sure I knew it didn't. But I don't know. How can I trust him? I thought he promised transparency, by the way, Mike. How do we know we can trust the guy? Here's what we know. We do know, right, Mike, that he is tight with the guy, Bill Ayers, I told you about. Now, whether you agree or not, the depth of their friendship or what have you, he's friends, he's been at fundraisers. I mean, this is a guy that's a part of his life, Bill Ayers. We also know Bill Ayers is very tight with a guy like Chavez. I just connect lines, Mike. I'm not saying that Hugo Chavez and Barack Obama are on the BlackBerry together, necessarily. But what is the need for the secrecy, I guess, would be more the question.
Might be, huh? All right. Second question is that.
Wait a minute. This is very, very key, Mike. I really want to stick on this. What is, do you think, his need for secrecy?
I don't think that it's secrecy. I think that he's a new guy, young guy, and he, you know, all those people that supported him during the campaign, where he had those millions of donors and all the rest. I think that I don't know. You know, I don't know his mind. I don't know what his exact thoughts are. But I just think that there's no harm in having it. I don't think
we don't know. I guess the thing is, Mike, we don't know anything about him, though, right? You know that we don't know. We haven't seen his college records. I mean, there's so much about the guy we just don't know, Mike. And I mean, literally don't know. Don't have access to. There are all kinds of stories written, and I mean legitimate press stories. I'm not talking about kook website stuff. I mean, there's just a ton about this guy we don't know. And the press gives him a pass. And I just wonder why it doesn't bug you a little bit that there's stuff about this guy, unlike any president before him, we literally can't have access to, and nobody seems to be demanding it. I just find that very troubling. Don't you, as an American?
I don't. What I want to know is that these people are saying that this guy is a terrorist, and he's weird. He's we don't know about him. He's secretive, and Bill Ayers and Reverend Wright and all the rest of stuff. And
call him a terrorist.
How did he go through school and go through the government and be a community organizer and all the rest, get elected to office, and then get elected president? Man is what, 47, over 48, and no one has asked these questions before. After all that longevity in the government, no one's ever questioned before, and nothing come out before. I don't know. It just seems to me like if there was something there, it would have been exposed during all his long
Mike. Now, Mike, you're a guy that likes Obama, so you're hearing what you want to hear. The fact of the matter is nothing. We don't know anything about the guy. I mean, what do you know about him? What do you know about this guy? A community organizer. Do you know he's been in the Senate? He was in the Senate for 2 years. That's all we know about him. We barely know anything about his legislative record while he was in Illinois. We don't know the guy. He has no public record to speak of.
Well,
we just don't. I mean, that's not even that's not even a criticism, other than to tell you we don't. He's a blank slate, Mike. He was elected as a blank slate.
Why do you think? Okay, why does that necessarily automatically mean he's evil or sinister or wrong?
I didn't say evil. I didn't use the word sinister. I said it troubles me that the secrecy exists.
Take the word sinister out of it, or evil. Why do you think there's something bad about him then? Because you don't know him, because you don't know anything, why do you automatically jump to being bad and wrong?
Well, here's what we do know. Here's what I do know, and this is fact. We do know that the man, let me ask you this. I don't want to make this about an abortion show, but let me ask you this. What about infanticide? What do you think about abortion in general? And I'm talking about late term. I'm talking about child born out of the womb, still opportunity to kill child after birth. Do you think that's a crime?
Do I think this is a crime? Yeah, of course. Well, I don't know, but I don't know.
No, your instinct was to say, yes, you thought it was a crime. And the fact of the matter is, Mike, in the Illinois state legislature, this guy stood in the way of making that act illegal. That, in my mind, is disgusting. We know his relationship with Bill Ayers, a man who just said on Fox News with Alan Colmes a couple of weeks ago that he has absolutely no regrets whatsoever about his own domestic terrorist actions, bombing the Pentagon and the Capitol building, New York City Police headquarters. This guy ran with some shady folks. He sat in this church for 20 years with this incendiary preacher. Mike, these things, I don't want to dredge it up all over again because you've heard it all, but relationships matter. When you've acknowledged now the guy's a blank slate and we don't know anything about him, all we have to judge, all we've ever had to judge Barack Obama on, Mike, is his relationships and his acquaintances, and we all know them to be very, very unnerving, very disturbing. His good friends and colleagues, the only people we do know that have gone on record, are very troubling people. People you and I, Mike, I would guess, don't traditionally spend time with. Thanks for the call. I'm moving on. Let's go to another Las Vegas call. Frank, I'm Chris, in for Michael on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Chris, your opening monologue, I mean, you stated it all. There it is. If we're not almost communist, we're doggone sure socialist. The market's bearing it out. I got some bad news for your business listeners. You want to believe communist NBC or MS, or I call it Comedy Central. The market is going to drop to 5,200. We're going to have short covers all year long. The disassociated press here in Vegas, Chris, just announced the economic forecasters for Clark County don't see a turnaround anytime after the end of 2010-11. And if this town doesn't turn around, MGM just couldn't get the bond. They couldn't get a loan on a billion dollar bond to finish City Center. We are hurting. This is what socialism is. Misery loves company. And hey, if we're all miserable, we're going to relabel misery happiness. Orwell did it. Chris, thank you for the time. Yeah, I want to hear the rest of your show.
Well, Frank, you sound like a smart guy. You sound like you know what you're talking about. And in Las Vegas, Nevada, you mentioned Clark County. That is the home to tremendous tourism. And the mayor, Oscar Goodman, who is a bit of a circus character. But on one point, I agree with him. This is a guy who said, what the hell does the White House have any business in telling people all across the country, whether their businesses are floundering or not, whether they should go spend their tourism dollars, their tax, or their own private investment dollars? This guy is single-handedly killing the tourism industry, as a matter of fact. The last time I was here filling in for Michael, I read you a joint statement, a joint letter by all the presidents and heads of the major hotel chains that said, what are you guys doing? What are you doing in Washington, D.C.? You're killing our business as the hotel industry. You're telling all these people that traditionally spend literally millions of dollars a year with us on corporate junkets and bonus trips and golf trips, all that stuff that sounds extravagant to so many people, that is just as much a part, Frank, of the economy as anything else. Because out in New, and we learned this in the last election in Las Vegas, Frank. We learned, didn't we, that all the people that work in those casinos, all the maids, all those people, that's a huge union. Who was trying to court that union? Remember Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton? They were in a showdown for those Vegas voters. They were in a showdown for them. And now you got the very guy who was out there courting. And didn't he win Nevada, Frank? Did Obama win Nevada?
Just barely. And Ron Paul ran second. And the disassociated press did not post that at all, that Ron Paul came in second in Nevada, by the way.
But, Frank, think about this for a minute. Here's a guy that won this state and pledged all these workers, these maids, the folks that are doing the grunt work in Las Vegas, that he was their guy. He was going to represent their union. Now he's in Washington constantly railing on anyone that dares spend money in your town. At what point, Frank, do you think people in your own backyard of Vegas are going to wake up and realize they got hoodwinked?
Oh, they will, and they pointed out in our papers, but you didn't see it in the disassociated press, that every other city from Frisco, where you're at, that these bankers are going to go have their conventions, are going to we're slashing room rates. Our occupancies are down 50%. So they've slashed room rates. The banquets were going to be cut. They were going to save tremendous money coming here, but not anymore.
Well, that's because socialism doesn't allow for that opulence. Nobody gets to celebrate. Nobody gets to have fun. Nobody golfs. Nobody gets massages. Nobody goes to hotels. We all get just enough, Frank, right? Just enough.
Image is everything. The appearance of impropriety. It's all a show. It's all a facade. And we're socialist. Accept that. And now they're full communist ahead. Great show, Chris.
Thanks, Frank. Let me go to Corey, Chicago. Corey, I'm Chris in for Michael on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for the call.
All right. I just want to comment on the Bill Ayers and the Obama affiliation. I mean, they both sit on the board together. And, you know, granted, Bill Ayers had some devious things in his past or whatever. But Obama gets all the flack because he sat on the board. But he believed in building up the community. Bill Ayers was building up the community. Just because of what Bill Ayers did in the past, said Barack Obama stopped helping, you know, his community.
Okay, Corey, look, the ship has sailed on Bill Ayers. I mean, the guy was, again, on network television just 2 weeks ago, reaffirming his commitment to the destruction and devastation of the country. I mean, in 2006, he's down there with Hugo Chavez, claiming capitalism ain't the way, socialism's the way. I mean, if you're willing to kind of excuse it as like it was like a pot bust for an ounce or something, he was pulled over like it was your high school kid that got busted for some booze. And it's not the same thing, Corey. You do understand that, right?
Yeah, I understand that. But socialism, you know, it's working in Canada. You know, national health care.
Okay, so you're a guy that you're on board the socialism train. Then you like it.
Yes. Yeah,
now what do you like about it?
I like about it that, you know, we have whoever needs help, you know, we help them out, and you know, we have stuff that we can all, like even the library. Library is socialist. We all get to use it. We pay our taxes to it. You know, the money has to go somewhere. Might as well go to health care or, you know, education. You know, also I believe that everybody's able to go to college for free like they do in France. You know, I mean, there would be a much better place.
Corey, do you have any investments?
Any investments?
Yeah.
No.
Thanks for the call. Michael, Tucson, Arizona, real quick on the Savage Nation. Hi.
I guess my concern would be, I didn't realize presidents weren't allowed to use personal communication devices. I thought... And I can understand it back in the day, you know, when, you know, phones were mainly for businesses and things like that. But it seems a little odd to me that, you know, a president couldn't have a cell phone to communicate with his daughter or his family or things like that. You know, I understand with technology being as it is, there's a lot of other means that, and a lot of other things he could be doing with it. But it could be as simple as, you know, he likes his favorite sports team and is getting information in text form. But it doesn't necessarily strike me as something that would necessarily be... negative, but certainly could be employed that way. So there should be probably some safeguards, but it seems a little arcane to keep somebody from having a personal communication device at all.
Michael, it's the President of the United States. Do you think if he really needed to be in touch with someone, he couldn't get there?
Oh, no, I certainly believe that. I certainly believe that. But
what's the need for a private personal communication device for the most connected, most recognizable, most powerful man on earth?
Well, personally, for example, I don't think it's anybody's business communications between him and his family. And I certainly believe that he should be allowed to do that.
He lives with them. They can call him on a dime in a minute.
Yeah, but we're in a different world today. We're dealing with people who are, you know, elsewhere, other places, things going on. Don't get me wrong. I definitely agree with you on the, you know, you've got to have some sort of, you know, watch out sort of category. But getting to the point where you're, you know, pretty much in the dark ages of technology. No.
It's not enough. But see, I don't want to get caught in this. I'm not hip. I don't get it. I'm not with it. It's not about being cool and hip and plugged in and switched on. He's the President of the United States. He's got people all around him that can literally, he can communicate with anyone in an instant. He can be on the phone with the premier of any major nation in 5 seconds if he wants it, Michael. It's not a matter of that for him. I mean, we can't, this isn't like you and me driving to the office. You get that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and certainly I'm not probably even considering the fact that, you know, hey, like I said, he's the President of the United States. He needs to get hold of his daughter. It'll happen. Somebody else will have a cell phone nearby or something like that. But then again, that still falls into the same category of, well, he's using a piece of technology and it's not being, you know, documented.
That's it. That's my thing, Michael. It's secrecy, and this is Mr. Transparency. Chris Stegall in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's a colossal mistake. And, you know, we've seen a hopeful presidency, Lyndon Johnson's presidency, burn up in the furnace of war. I fear that this brilliant young man, this hopeful new administration, could easily burn their prospects of a great presidency in the war in Afghanistan or elsewhere.
Just minutes after the results were announced, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez took his place on the People's Balcony, Miraflores Palace, and proclaimed victory.
Victory, victory, popular victory. This is a clear victory for the people, a clear victory for the revolution.
Well, we know those characters are tight. Bill Ayers, you heard, Obama's old Chicago education, writing, fundraising buddy. Hugo Chavez, who continues to win re-election after re-election after re-election after re-election. We know they're friends. You want to draw the line or not? Do you want to connect the dots or not? That's the question. I'm Chris. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage tonight. Michael, great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity. Glad you're here, too. 800-449-8255. Plenty more to get to, but I got to tell you something. With the BlackBerry, with the knowledge of the BlackBerry, the private communication device that no other president has ever enjoyed, and the relationships that he's built, and we know he has them, they just went away? They just evaporated after the campaign's over? Well, there are some people that he has very, very close relationships with that he's apparently no longer either speaking to, or he's able to reach out to them in some way, and we know that he has the private ability to contact people in ways no other president has ever been able to before. Those are things we know. These are just facts I'm stating. So you can connect the dots if you want. You can call me crazy if you want. I'm throwing it out there because nobody else is talking about it. Eric in Chicago, you're on the Savage Nation. I'm Chris in for Michael. Hi.
Mr. Stigall, thank you very much for taking my phone call. I'd like to know what you think was the tipping point in our history over the last 40 years that suddenly made the way that liberals are talking now and the economic stimulus bill acceptable. 40 years ago, they would have been blacklisted as communists. They did it to a lot of celebrities. They did it to a lot of politicians back then. What do you think happened in American culture that, hey, this is okay now. We're going to go ahead and this is good.
Well, listen, Eric, I think it may be just as simple as this. A lot of power-hungry folks and a lot of ignorance. Ignorance and power-hungry leaders.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The budget also seeks to close the tax gap by tackling tax shelters and other efforts to abuse our tax laws, including on the international front. Over the next several months, the president will propose a series of legislative and enforcement actions to reduce tax avoidance.
That's the tax cheat, Tim Geithner. Hi, Chris Stigall, in for Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. Glad you're here, and Michael, thanks for allowing me to be here. The telephone number, 800-449-8255, the tax cheat advising the I don't think anybody on this House panel over the last week listening to the Tim Geithner testimony could keep a straight face as the tax cheat was talking about cracking down on those who don't pay taxes. Did anyone sit through that with a straight face? Again, I don't care about your politics. Tell me that you, with a straight face, listen to the tax cheat talk about how he was going to get tough on people that didn't pay taxes. We're exploring tonight the psychosis. That really is, I think it's worth a look under the hood, if you will, of the Obama administration. At least those that are there holding office, because there are still a number of them that are still empty. How about this one? So we've already talked about the BlackBerry, the use of the secrecy. This is supposed to be the most transparent administration ever. You know, we just came off of the most secret. The most secretive administration ever. 8 years of secrecy. Cloak and dagger, you know, the dark of night, the Karl Rove and the Dick Cheney and the shadow government. All the secrecy that was alleged by the Bush administration. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. I don't know, but all I know is I was promised, yes, we can, there wouldn't be any more secrecy under Barack Obama. And I got to tell you something. You take a look at the markets, people that look forward and project the nation's financial future, they see a heck of a lot of secrecy. I mean, the market's not up 0.5% today. The Dow is now sitting at 6,600, roughly. We haven't seen lows like this since 1997. You know why? Because people, thinking people, smart people with money that do invest, you and me and those of us that have money, small business owners and people that want to put money into the market, want to expand and invest, they don't dare. Why? Secrecy. Nobody understands what they're doing. Nobody understands what the tax cheat there, Tim Geithner's doing. Nobody knows what his plans are. Barack Obama's continued commitment to secrecy. Everything he does, carefully choreographed. What he isn't carefully choreographed about, we don't know. We don't know about it. Secret. BlackBerry. Now, nobody wants to board this sinking Titanic. Have you read this story? This is a major story of the week as well. Not just that Hugo Chavez is probably on the BlackBerry as we speak with Bill Ayers and friends. The other major news story here, for 5 weeks, little Timmy the tax cheat Geithner there has battled the worst economic crisis in generations with no deputies in place. This is from the Associated Press, okay? I just want to be clear. I state that because I want to be very, very clear that this, if there ever was an organization friendly to this administration, it is certainly the Associated Press. And even they now have to admit, because I'm telling you, anyone with any sum of money, and I don't, it doesn't have to be a lot. Do you have kids? Are you trying to save for college right now in some sort of state-run fund, a 529 or something? Do you have a 401k? Do you have any mutual funds? Do you have any kind of savings at all tied to the market in some way? Well, if you do and you receive a statement, you, like everyone else in the country, have lost 40 to 60% of your money. Because Timmy the tax cheat has said nothing to indicate to anyone who's investing they should have confidence in what's going on. Only an idiot would invest in what's going on in the market today. Oh, but I forgot. Barry told us we should invest. President Obama told us we should invest this week, too. I mean, I'm sorry. He said now is a great time to buy. Get it while it's hot. Like it was a bargain basement furniture store. Nobody dare. Not with the stooge he's put in place to run the show. And by the way, nobody wants to work with this stooge, Timmy the tax cheat. Back to the Associated Press here. With an awkward first television appearance, a bank rescue plan that lacked promised specifics, and two restructured bailouts that raised taxpayer risk, Geithner has failed to calm financial markets, desperate for answers. Just what I told you. Now, how about this? How about everyone again with money in the market? Can we say that? Instead of critics say, how about everyone that's lost 40 to 60% of some kind of investment vehicle? I'd say we can all officially call ourselves critics then. Now, I don't know what percentage of the country has some sort of investment in the market, be it 401k, IRA, college fund. I don't know, but I would guess it's a good chunk. You want to say half for fun? So instead of saying critics say, let's say half. I still think it's more than that. Or even if you don't, I bet you work for a company that's traded publicly. And I bet you're sweating, looking over your shoulder at the share prices plummeting every day, wondering if your company is going to lay you off next because they're hemorrhaging on the market. So this affects most of us. Whether you realize it or not, it affects most of us. You don't have to be an economist to understand what's happening here. So don't give me critics say part of Geithner's problem is. I want you to start reporting this as it's appropriate, Associated Press. The American public says part of the problem is Geithner is flying solo. Now, do you believe this? This story blew my mind when I actually read it in print. Not one of this man's top 17 deputies has been named. Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, the tax cheat, the guy that runs the IRS, is supposed to have 17 deputies in place. Not only have they not been named, they've not been confirmed. And we know everybody that's been named that's tried to go through the confirmation process, they have a problem paying taxes. But without senior leadership, lower-level Treasury employees can't make decisions or represent the government in crucial conversations with banks and others. In other words, nobody knows what this guy is doing. He doesn't know what he's doing. Everyone's waiting for some kind of concrete answers. And Barack Obama, who won this election back in November and went out to his little podium with his little, you remember the little podium with the little placard that they made up, the fictitious office of the president-elect with its own little seal? Remember that? He started rolling out with announcements and I'm hiring this person and I'm picking up this person and I'm appointing this person. He started doing that a couple of weeks after he was elected, straight through his Hawaiian trip. And he was doing it because he wanted to communicate. He understood the gravity, the seriousness of the recession we were headed into. Well, how is it then that in this economic freefall, now with the Dow sitting at 6,600, how is it that this loser, this tax cheat, Tim Geithner, has no one to help him? How is that possible? Can you tell me that? How is it that there is no one in this administration, and you take a look at it, in these times, take a look at who he has appointed so far, Barack Obama. Find the CEO, find the executive, find someone with real skin in the game in this administration. You can't find it. It doesn't exist. And now, two or three people that Obama has appointed to various positions, including those under Geithner, have bailed. Now, why do you think they've bailed? Think about this now. This is very, very important because it's not just about politics anymore. It's not Democrat, Republican. It's not about loyalty to Obama anymore. You know what it is? It's loyalty to self because, as I just said, every one of us, nearly every one of us in some way, shape, or form, very directly or indirectly, are tied to this market, which is hemorrhaging. And so what happens when you leave a private sector job where you're doing fairly well on the market? Let's call yourself a CEO. Let's call yourself a Wall Street investor, somebody that makes money in Wall Street or investments. Now, I ask you right now, they come to you, the Obama administration, and say, hey, you want to come to work for Timmy Geithner? Help us out of this mess? Now, you've just come from a place where you're clearly getting the signals. You don't know what the hell's going on in this administration. Why would you go? Why would you go? Oh, and by the way, all of us are losing 40 to 60% of our own profits, of our own savings, of our own investments. Why would you go? People that ordinarily leave the private sector to go serve people in the White House, they leave because they feel a sense of duty or purpose or loyalty or whatever, and they can take the hit for 2 or 4 years financially. Government service generally doesn't pay as much as they could make in the private sector. We all know that. But the payday in government service traditionally is you can go on the lecture circuit, you can go be a lobbyist, you can go write a book. That's traditionally the payoff, but guess what? This time it's different. Nobody of any intelligence, nobody that's ever made real money out there in the private sector wants to go to work for this guy because, first of all, he's already lost so much of what they had. Second, they don't know what's waiting for them on the other side if they dared step foot into this administration. It's very, very easy to understand. Politics aside now, folks, reality. The rubber's met the road. Every one of us, and I don't care how you voted or what little letter is behind your name in Congress, any of us that have money tied to this market, any of us that work for companies that are tied to this market, are in dire straits. And this administration and its lack of direction, its lack of effectiveness, its total lack of ability to comprehend what this country needs to right this ship, it's killing us. And no one wants to go near it. It's toxic. 800-449-8255. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We're going to be setting up a blog. I'm Peter Orszag. I run the White House Office of Management and Budget. We're going to be setting up a blog at OMB, at the Office of Management and Budget. Budget documents and a lot of the rest of what OMB does can often be very confusing or complicated, and I have found that a blog is a great way of communicating with people clearly, providing a clear summary of what it is that we're doing that day or a document that we're releasing.
Oh, all that guy needs is some tape on his glasses. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. Michael, thanks for allowing me the opportunity to be here. Glad you're here, too. You can call in 800-449-8255 if you want. We're talking Hugo Chavez. We're talking Obama's BlackBerry. We're talking Timmy the Tax Cheat Geithner. We're talking everybody bailing, anybody of any kind of common sense, anybody in the marketplace who could actually help this disastrous administration in the marketplace has bailed or is bailing or will not come. Sanjay Gupta, another notable name today. Sanjay Gupta's that guy, the doctor on CNN. Now, I actually kind of like Sanjay Gupta for one thing. He took on that fathead Michael Moore once upon a time on CNN last year. Do you remember that? Sanjay Gupta, surprisingly, shockingly, he's a neurosurgeon, I think. And he's a CNN contributor. And unbelievably, Michael Moore's big propaganda film about why Cuba's great and their healthcare situation in Cuba is great, came out with that film, and Sanjay Gupta came on, I think it was, I don't know, Larry King or something, and just beat the stuffing and the buffet out of Michael Moore. It was embarrassing. Because Gupta, I mean, obviously, he's a neurosurgeon. He's in the medical field. This is a guy who's not only a contributing correspondent to CNN, but makes a lot of jack on the side, I'm sure, as a neurosurgeon. That's kind of a specialty field. Now, Barack Obama asks him to become his new Surgeon General. Guess what Gupta says today? No. I'm out, Barry. Thanks. Sorry. No thanks. Says he wants to spend more time with the kids. Uh-huh. Now, what do you bet? What do you bet that, like everybody else, as I just said, Sanjay Gupta, as a neurosurgeon and contributor to CNN, can make far more money than he ever could as Surgeon General and has probably lost a tremendous amount of money, like most of us, if you have anything, in any way, any kind of investment vehicle? Can he afford 4, God help us, 8 years of being the Surgeon General and doing Obama's bidding for a cause, by the way, he doesn't believe in, socialized medicine? No, he got a conscience. Gupta said, you know, and I bet you Gupta voted for the guy, by the way. It's amazing, really, when you see it. And I've seen other guys on TV. Not going to mention their names, but you know who they are. There are other guys on TV, money guys and others, that you know voted for Obama. You know they did. But they're all doing the same thing now because there's one thing we all have in common. Politics aside, it's our wallets. It's our kids' future. It's paying for our mortgages. That stuff matters to every one of us. And guess what? Most of us are losing it quickly. Losing a lot of our money. Not destitute. We'll be fine. Because we work hard. And where we're missing money, we'll pick it up and we'll get another job if we have to. Most of us don't need handouts. We can fix this. Even in the worst of times, we can fix this for ourselves. The problem is it doesn't have to be this way. But Timmy the tax cheat, promising to crack down on the wealthiest among us, has absolutely no plans to do anything but continue to regulate, overtax, and browbeat anyone of any kind of wealth. Even guys like Warren Buffett, guys who had a ton of money, still have a ton of money, who were out there rallying around Obama, even they now are saying, this is dire. This is bad. Bad to worse. Nobody wants to go to work for these people. Why would you if you had any money? Bruce, New York. I'm Chris, in for Michael on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hey, Chris, you know, I mean, I'm no Timmy the tax cheat, but I know how to cheat on my taxes, and I would know if I did it. But the reason these banks are in the situation they're in is because they've been allowed to do whatever they want. We have regulations like Regulation Z that says you can charge any interest rate you want to people, and on a whim, at any time, you can change unilaterally the terms of a contract. What other industry has such a provision and is protected by those terms?
Now, Brad, Bruce, the point you're making is interesting because knowing this and knowing Geithner, knowing he came out of your state, by the way, had the federal, it was the Fed bank there in New York, was it not? I believe that's where the tax cheat came from. Now, why? He's very connected to Wall Street, obviously. And knowing this about bank, connected to the banking system, Bruce, why wouldn't, do you think then? I mean, under your estimation that the banks are underregulated and running amok, And corrupt, why wouldn't some of them want to jump on board the tax cheat bandwagon and come to work for him? For the same reasons I've laid out, or do you think there are other reasons? Why can't he find good help?
Nobody wants to go to work for him because I think they don't see an opportunity beyond this administration. They don't see what they've had in the past. They know it's changing.
And burning to the ground.
The industry are just... They see the whole world changing. They don't even know what to do about it. And as long as I live, you know, Nixon keeps looking better every year.
Bruce, thanks for the call. Listen, you know something, and you know who he's, look who Obama has around him. We're kind of exploring, keeping with the theme of looking at this administration, the psychological makeup of this administration. Old Clinton folks and these nerdlinger wimpy types, these wimpy, wet noodle that Ortzog you just heard, the management and budget director, and Geithner, These kind of nerdy, these guys that you hung by their underwear in a locker in school. This subservient, nerdy. They don't inspire. They certainly don't instruct. They instill no confidence in anyone. They're the only ones that'll work around Obama. No one else of any kind of leadership wants to go to work there. You got to ask why.
What's the difference between working, what's different about working for President Obama versus President Bush?
That sounds like the subject of a good book.
Is that a book you're planning on writing? Are they different presidents? Do they have different styles, temperaments? What's the major difference to you?
It's really hard to say. I think that probably President Obama is somewhat more analytical, and he makes sure he hears from everybody in the room on an issue, and if they don't speak up, he calls on them.
A marked difference from his predecessor?
President Bush was interested in hearing different points of view, but didn't go out of his way to make sure everybody spoke if they hadn't spoken up before.
Now, this is a very interesting piece of audio from last week. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity to be here. Your phone number, 800-449-8255. We're spending this show from top to bottom analyzing what's going on, in our estimation, behind the scenes of the Barack Obama administration, because we know so very little. The markets know very little. That's obvious. They're tanking. We know very little. That's obvious. Things like BlackBerries, things like phone calls, secret meetings, secret phone calls between Rahm Emanuel and people like Paul Begala and James Carville, the media blacklist you've been reading about this week. They've clearly orchestrated that, a political strategy that we haven't seen since Nixon, sort of a blacklist, if you will. So we know there's a ton of secrecy in the Obama administration that promised total transparency. We know there is a total vacuum of leadership with Timmy the Tax Cheat Geithner as head of the IRS, head of monetary policy, head of structuring where this market goes from here. In fact, in this story, I wanted to finish this, there was a lot to this story by the Associated Press that quotes Paul Volcker, Obama economic advisor, former Fed chairman, called the situation shameful. That is Geithner's situation, having 17 empty slots underneath him. No one's helping him. He's wrecking the economy by himself. Here's Volcker's comment. The Secretary of the Treasury is sitting there without a deputy, without undersecretaries, without any, as far as I know, assistant secretaries responsible in substantive areas at a time of a very severe crisis. He shouldn't be sitting there alone. Why is he sitting there alone? Should the most popular, powerful man in the country have any problem securing the best and brightest talent? Would you stop and think about this for a second? There is only one place in the United States that's hiring, baby. There is a help wanted sign in the Treasury Department, and we can't fill the slots. Think about this. What's unemployment now? 8%? How many jobs lost? I guess the adage, misery loves company, is not true here. But really, stop and think about this for a second. Are you telling me, and in fact, this story goes on to say, skipping ahead here, Treasury employees said even the best lower-level staffers and top advisors can't do the work required of the Treasury's top ranks. They can't explain Treasury's policies to a nervous public or give a fair hearing to stakeholders in the crucial decisions the department must make. No one can do this job. This is what we heard about Timmy the tax cheat. Well, we've got to excuse his tax cheating. He's the only guy to do it. Well, he's not doing it well. And now nobody wants to go to work for him. There's no one in the United States that can do this job but Tim Geithner. And there's no one in the United States that can come in and assist Tim Geithner. Nobody in Wall Street that voted for old Barack Obama wants this job. Why? I continue to ask this question, why? Well, then you have Bob Gates there, Robert Gates, defense secretary. This was fascinating. Asked last week on Meet the Press, I believe it was, asked what the difference was between Barack Obama's administration and George W. Bush's administration. paraphrasing here, it was a longer clip, but paraphrasing here, he said, well, Barack Obama is so much more analytical. He insists on hearing from everyone in the room. Well, we know this is phony. We know Barack Obama's an authoritarian. How do we know that? Because the only people working for him are these nerds. Again, you'd hang by their underwear in a locker. This Ortzog, Management and Budget Director, Geithner. These guys are taking marching orders, plain and simple. They're not advising Obama. Obama does what he wants. Obama's told you he doesn't care about the markets. He doesn't care. He said it this week. I'm not crafting policy based on the markets. Doesn't care. He's doing what he wants, but he's analytical. You see, he puts out this image of being professorial. That's his thing. That's his strategy. The professor. Because after all, that's what he was. He was a constitutional professor. He taught. He's a teacher. So here's the strategy. Because George W. Bush had the look or the image or it was reported to be or was, whatever you believe about George W. Bush and his administration, the narrative was he was the authoritarian. He was bullheaded. He called all the shots. He took no one else's counsel under advisement. He listened to no one except Dick Cheney. That was what we were told about George W. Bush. And Gates there says, I didn't, you know, look, not everybody in the room when George W. Bush was at the head of the table, not everybody in the room got to speak. But under Barack Obama, well, he's more analytical. He'll call on you if you're not participating. What does that sound like? Call on you if you're not participating. Is that not what they do in class? Do you remember that when you would slink down in your chair in the third or fourth row of the classroom? Pop quiz or the teacher would ask a question during a lecture. You'd kind of slink down hoping you wouldn't be called on. Call on everyone in the room. Now, I ask you as a leader, if you're someone that heads a business or a company and you actually lead something out there, and let's, again, presuming that he would actually listen and that he's not authoritarian and that he actually does do this sort of thing, that's leadership? I'd say no. Then we have that stupid, ridiculous display of the economic breakout session he had. Do you remember that? The economic breakout session. He called all those different members of the cabinet and Congress and all these people people in business, enterprise, came to Capitol Hill, breakout sessions. They all got out big charts, big dry erase boards, wrote their thoughts out. I called it office space for the federal debt. It was like an office space exercise. You watch The Office on TV, it was that. It's that atmosphere. It was a silly exercise in academic instruction or something. Report back to me. Report back to me your findings. Ridiculous waste of time. It's all a show. It's all style. Flash. Pizzazz. Let's go to Houston, Texas. I think it's Yulin. Yulin, you're on the Savage Nation. I'm Chris, in for Michael. Hi.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call. I think that these people don't want to be associated, these bankers, economists, don't want to be associated with Obama's administration just because of the policies. I'm not sure it's money-driven as far as them not making enough money, but I don't think they want their reputation associated with the administration. And a perfect example is the president of TFC Bank was on TV the last night, night before last, and they said that we were told to go ahead and take bailout money because they were going to give this to prosperous banks, banks that were solid. And now it's turned out these bailouts are starting to go to actually bailing banks that are failing. And he said, we don't want to be associated with that kind of, that kind of thing associated with our bank. So basically that bank gave their money back to the governor, said, look, we don't want the bailout money.
You hit the nail on the head, buddy, and that is exactly right. The people that are out there still making it, regional banks, I don't know the name of the bank you just mentioned, but the same goes for Ford. You know, Ford doesn't get enough credit, and I think they deserve it. Ford, at the 11th hour, while it looked like they were going to take it, said, no, we're not taking government bailout money. We don't want it. And I'll tell you something. At the end of the day, they're trying to right the ship on their own, and I think they're better off publicly from a PR standpoint for it. And other regional banks in my region of the country, your region down there in Texas, as you just mentioned, people are saying, no, We don't want an injection of federal money because they've seen what happens. Yulin, you saw this. Barack Obama, what, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, calls all the governors of all the states in the union up to the White House. Did you see this? All these governors are sitting up there, and he wags his finger in their face and says, now I'm giving you all money, but you better know I'm going to watch how you're spending it. And if I catch any of you misspending this money, I'm going to rah, rah, rah. And we've heard all the threats from Capitol Hill about, if we give you money, then rah, 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 rah. And these senators that are now pledging, if we give you any money, then we're going to fire everybody on your board of directors. We're going to fire your corporate leadership. It is just, you're absolutely right. They're forcing money on people that don't even want it or need it. And the answer, why are they doing that? Of course, very simple. Power. If they inject federal money into all these places, whether they need it or whether they don't, then they're on the hook. Then they're in government control. And systemically throughout this economy, that is exactly, in my estimation, what this White House is trying to do. They're trying to inject money forcibly, in some instances, on certain financial institutions, on certain auto companies, on certain banks. They're forcing this because if you take it, then we gotcha. Then you're on the hook. You're ours. We own you. Like you're the hooker. Five. Ted, Kansas City. You're on the Savage Nation. I'm Chris in for Michael. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call. I don't think they want to turn it around yet. I think they want to wait till they're closer to 2010. I think it's orchestrated. I think he doesn't have all of his social agenda outlined yet, or at least moving where he wants it to yet. So, you know, some simple actions, for example, if they would change the mark-to-market rules, it would change a lot of things, but they're not willing to do that yet.
Ted, that's just it. With a stroke of a pen, your point is, with a stroke of a pen, and I don't mean to cut you off here, but you make the point, you know, mark to market, which I know some people don't follow, but it's a banking regulation. If they did away with, many people think that would impact right away. But of course, more importantly, Ted, we know that some of our top earners and investors in this country, if they knew they got a break, if they knew they could go out there and try to soldier on and make some money in the markets, try to expand their business and hire and grow, if they did it, if they tried it, if they knew they could do it without penalty, if they succeed, Ted, they do it. That's called tax cuts at the top level. With a stroke of a pen, Obama could do that. He refuses to do it.
Because he doesn't want it to happen yet.
Ted, thanks for the call. 800-449-8255. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Chris Stigall sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, 800-449-8255. Thanks for being here, Michael. Thank you for allowing me to sit in tonight. Talking about this cast of characters in the Obama administration, those that actually still, you know, work there, have a job and have taken the job, there are still many, many vacancies. The help wanted sign, the only place still hiring is government. The only help wanted sign is in the White House, and nobody's taken the jobs. Are these the jobs Americans won't do, by the way? Here's another question I have. All the illegals we have that are doing the jobs Americans won't do, can we employ some of the illegals at the White House? Is that possible? I mean, we got the tax cheat as the head of the IRS. What's it matter? Bring in a few guys, pay them a few pesos a day. There you go. Bing, bang, boom. Let's stock the Treasury Secretary's office, the 17 deputies he needs, with the illegals. It's obviously jobs Americans won't do. I like that idea. Always thinking. Well, we've analyzed Timmy the Tax Cheat. We've analyzed the Ayers Obama BlackBerry Hugo Chavez connection, and I believe there is one. We've analyzed the guy with the rug, the nerd that you hang by his underwear in the locker in high school. Obama's a more academic leader. He's a more analytical guy. He calls on everyone in the room. So we know it's a big orgy of academic exercises in the White House. We know this. We know a lot of people don't want to go to work there. We know that his underlings don't know what they're doing, and they don't dare speak up because, frankly, it doesn't matter whether he pretends publicly they're speaking up or not. He doesn't listen. He's authoritarian. Obama's doing what he wishes to do. Then there's the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Lest we forget her. What's she doing? Telling an audience today, yeah, you should never waste a good crisis. Did you hear this? In Brussels? Highlighting the opportunity to rebuild greener, less energy-intensive ways of bolstering economies. Never waste a good crisis. We've heard that twice now from this administration. I think the first came from Rahm Emanuel, her old pal from her husband's administration. This is a bumper sticker for the Obama people. Never waste a good crisis? How inspired is that? What happened to Yes We Can? This guy doesn't, the least inspiring human being I have ever encountered publicly, forget president, in general. Can you imagine the leader of your company stepping up and saying, well, it's tough, but I'll tell you this, I don't want to waste a good crisis. I want to scare the, you know, I a friend of mine the other day told me that his boss said, I think it was time for him, his contract was up. He was due a raise. He wanted a raise. Many people in his company had been laid off. He got to stay. And he was performing. He was doing well. He knew he was. The company knew he was doing well. And he was asking for a modest raise. And unhappy that he did not get it, he said, you know, now, wait a minute. This doesn't seem right. I'm still performing. I understand times are tough, but I'm still performing. The boss effectively said, hey, I've been firing people all around you. Now, you're lucky you have a job. Get back to work, shut your yap, or I'll find somebody else. You're lucky you have a job. Boy, now that is leadership. That's motivation. Never waste a good crisis. Yes, we can. Boy, that'll fill you up, make you feel good. So she's out there peddling the global warming falsehood again, talking down the country. There was more. I mean, she was on fire in Brussels today. Certainly the United States has been negligent in living up to its responsibilities, she said. Well, I haven't heard that kind of inspiration in a foreign nation about the United States since the president himself went stumping over there in Germany and apologized for our malfeasance in leadership over the decades. Yeah, they make you proud, don't they? Portland, Oregon. Cindy, you're on the Savage Nation. I'm Chris in for Michael. Hi.
Hi, Chris.
Thanks. Go ahead. Good morning. Hi.
Well, I was listening to the discussion about Geithner being unable to fill the positions, and my thoughts are that he doesn't want the positions filled. Why would he? He doesn't want anyone watching what he's doing.
Well, the thing is, he's such a mess, and everybody knows it. I don't think he's got anything to hide. He's a wreck.
Well, yeah, that's true, but, I think he has a lot to hide.
Well, I don't know, Cindy, so you're saying he's being purposely disorganized and destructive. I see. Okay, well, that's an interesting look. I mean, if I'd said it, they'd write on the people would be on blogs tonight suggesting that I was... And look, people do. I'm not... Cindy, thank you for the call. I don't doubt it. Do I believe there's an error, a purposeful error of... irrational behavior on the part of this White House? Purposeful? Yeah, I think there might be. I think the case can be made that the weaker this economy gets, the more power the government gets. I think the case can clearly be made here. Andy, New York, you're on the Savage Nation. I'm Chris in for Michael. Hi.
Chris, I first wanted to tell you I think you're doing a great job tonight.
Hey, thank you, sir.
But I want to get to my point. I think you really hit on something with the president's professorial ways. You know, I think with him and many of the people who's got around him, this is like an academic exercise. It's a dream they've had, and now they're having a shot at putting it in practice. But, you know, on campus, in the ivory tower, you can have whatever theory you want, but you never really have to test it with reality. And the problem is, we got real lives, real futures on the line. So I think it's just time to get real.
Andy, thank you. You know, there's a university in my hometown. I will not name them, but they're a big business school, and they're well known across the country as being a big business school, a study for economics. And I've got a great friend who's a conservative. He's a conservative economist, and he's studying to become he wants to get his doctorate, and he wants to become highly degreed in the area. But he told me that it's also a bastion of Keynesian socialized economics. The entire university, the school, is structured. I mean, it's not publicized that way. But as you say, academia and talking these things through in theory, it sounds great on paper. writing thesis statements and writing college papers and talking about it on the dry erase board with your professor with the elbow patches and the pipe. It's all great. It's all fun and games. It makes everybody feel good on the college campuses while you spread out your picnic blanket and have a little lunch there on the campus grounds. But when you get out in the real world, Timmy the tax cheat Geithner is finding out it ain't working. And nobody wants to come from the ivory towers to help him. We'll be back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Never waste a good crisis. And when it comes to the economic crisis, don't waste it when it can have a very positive impact on climate change and energy security. And that's what we're trying to do.
What does that mean? I know what it means. What do you think it means? What does she think that message sends to the world? Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. I'm glad you're here. Michael, thank you for allowing me to be here. MichaelSavage.com, the website where all the top news stories of the day are there for you to read, handpicked by Michael. Telephone number 800-449-8255. Hillary Clinton in Brussels. This story, we've been exploring tonight the makeup, the academic exercise, the help wanted sign that's going on in the White House right now. There is the only place hiring in the United States of America right now, in mass, is the White House, and they can't find takers. Again, I'm telling you, it's jobs Americans won't do. I think we send massive numbers of illegals to just line up outside the White House, the Treasury door there, see if they'll go to work for Geithner. I think that's a real possibility because he's got 17 deputy slots open. They haven't even appointed. And everyone looking at Tim Geithner knows the markets are floundering. Up 0.5% today, just kind of depressing. And look, we've been through this. Have you seen the T-shirts? They've made these great T-shirts that welcome back Carter. If you lived through the Carter administration, that's it. That's it, man. We're here again. The difference is, I suspect somewhere Carter at least cared. I don't recall Carter ever saying, "Oh, I don't create policy based on the markets." And Carter was a poor leader. You talk about malaise. Carter may have been creating it, but I don't think he wanted to. But you get the distinct impression that this guy wants it, needs it. The weaker the economy gets, the more public money thrust into these private institutions, what? The more power you get. And, of course, we started the show talking about Hugo Chavez, who makes a big public pronouncement down there in Venezuela just today. Come on down to socialism town, Barry. Welcome aboard. Well, what do we know about Barack Obama? We know he's very tight with Bill Ayers, and we know Bill Ayers is very tight with Hugo Chavez. We know Bill Ayers is very anti-capitalist. We know Bill Ayers is a domestic terrorist, and we know he is deeply, deeply tied to Barack Obama. Now, he's also very deeply tied and very connected, physically, literally, spoken audibly, favorably about Hugo Chavez. So you want to connect the dots, I ask you to connect the dots. You don't have to if you don't want to, but the fact of the matter is, it exists. It's there. It's a mess. It is a mess. This is an academic exercise. It's being made to look academic, but it's actually quite authoritarian. There's a deep strategy in place, because behind the scenes, it's the secrecy you don't know. You see, behind the scenes, these people are too smart. You don't come from academia without any kind of instruction. I mean, look, all these sort of ethereal, these things that you pontificate about with Bill Ayers, with professors, All these socialist policies, these things you discuss in the classroom, yeah, you really are trying to work them out now in the White House. You're seeing that happen. But here's what you do. Here's how you implement this slowly and surely. You call group studies together. You have big breakout sessions. You look like everybody's welcome to the table. You invite. Did you see today that this guy, Barack Obama, calls this thing called Twitter? Now, I don't know if you've heard of what Twitter is, but everybody's talking about Twitter, 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 Twitter now. It's some stupid thing where people get online onto a website and they can shoot each other messages about what they're doing. The question is, what are you doing? And you type in up to 140 characters, you can send a message to each other. You can get it on your cell phone, you can get it on your computer and your email. It basically is this narcissistic way of telling people what you're doing at every moment of every day. I don't know who would want to do that. I don't know why that's enjoyable. And I can't think of a human being that's interesting enough to me that I would log onto my email or check my cell phone that I'd want to know, oh, hey, look, John's doing his laundry. Ooh, what's next? What's coming next? Anyway, this is a big deal now. A lot of kids. It's a fad. I mean, I don't know. Is it here to stay? I don't know. My point is, it's taking off. You got people in Congress now doing it. It's some new campaign deal. The Obama people used it. The CEO is a fairly young guy. Ev Williams is his name. The only reason I even remember that is because it's the name of the cheap bourbon I buy when I can't afford the real stuff. So Ev Williams goes up to the White House. He's the CEO of Twitter. Now, here's the thing about Twitter. He goes up. I'm not making this up. They go up to the White House to talk about it. It's a young business leaders summit. Keep in mind the title. A young business leaders summit. Do you know the truth about Twitter? This wildly popular website that everyone's checking out now and being a part of? This is so typical Obama. It's all for show, man. Smoke and mirrors, razzle dazzle. Same deal as the economic breakout exercise where everybody broke up into groups and reported back to Obama. Same deal. The thing about Twitter, they're not making any money. I'm not making that up either. Read the story today. They cannot figure out how to make money with this website. So the big economic summit, young entrepreneurial economic summit called by Obama, one of the figureheads, one of the leaders, one of those invited to the White House to talk about it is a company that's making not a dime. Well, they've certainly got that in common with Timmy the Tax Cheat and what's going on over at the Treasury. And so to Mrs. Clinton. Out there peddling the phony science, says never waste a good crisis. This is a way to peddle her friend Al's big global warming scam. And again, as I said last hour, unbelievably, here again, she says it's very important that at the beginning of this effort, China has expressed a willingness to participate. They realize they've just surpassed the unfortunate record that we just held of being the largest carbon emitter. This is such a sham. This is so stupid. She attacked the use of energy as political weapons, echoing Europe's worries after repeat spats between Russia and gas transit countries. Hillary, excuse me, Madam Secretary, do you honestly believe the thing that has created recently with this recent gas spike, remember gas, $4 a gallon? Do you know what that was? Thank you, Russia. And do you know what Russia is loaded with? Oil. And do you think if Russia can get top dollar for what is the best and always will be the greatest, best, most affordable source of energy in the globe, oil, do you think Russia's just going to back away from it? Do you think they're just going to stop using it? They're going to stop drilling it? They're going to stop selling it? How stupid. Of course Russia is being aggressive. Of course Russia is using oil as a tool. But here's another dirty little secret. Of course, we know we've got plenty of it, too. No one has to be victimized. No one in the free world has to be victimized by thugs like Russia if they would just simply tap the resources we have available to us. But you've heard all this before. But listen to this stupidity. She continues, we are troubled. We're troubled by using energy as a tool of intimidation. We think that's not in the interest of creating a better and better functioning energy system. I wonder if they literally laugh out loud. Do you think Vladimir and the others laugh audibly, out loud, when they hear her say things like this, or when she says to the Israelis, when they retaliate or try to defend themselves in any way from the Palestinians, she's all, or North Korea or Iran, she always says these tepid little things like, it's not very helpful. You know, the launch of a test missile is not helpful. Developing nuclear weapons is not helpful to the peace process. We're troubled. Yeah, well, keep being troubled, sweetheart. Keep telling everybody it's not helpful. I'm glad you're playing Mrs. Rogers. That's really sweet. But here's how big boys wearing the big boy pants play. They got oil. They got a lot of it. And guess who's driving the bus? Daddy, with all the oil. Because guess what the globe needs to run? Oil. Guess who's got it? Russia. Guess who doesn't? At least not to the degree they do. Us. Why not? Because you and your boneheaded policies and your entire party who's running the show and old Cap'n Barry back there who has promised cap-and-trade policies, continuing to punish anyone and everyone that comes near oil exploration or daring to make progress in their company's growth. Tax, 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 tax. And remember, it's your party and your Congress that drug the oil companies up to Capitol Hill and excoriated them. Boy, these were the days. Remember this? When companies were excoriated for making a profit? Do you remember that? It's like the McCarthy hearings for profit. It all started then. Remember this? Before Bush left office and all the oil execs, when gas was $4 a gallon, they were drug up there. Congress was demanding to know, how dare you make so much money? Boy, that we had that problem today. Wouldn't that be nice? Now they're dragging them all up there saying, why are you losing all this money? All right, we'll give you money, but you understand this. You understand me. I'm in charge now. We gave you money. That means no more trips. That means no more offices. That means no more this, no more that. We run the show. You're going to start making this car. You're not going to burn this fuel. You're going to make this product. You're going to fire these people. You're going to fire your board. I'm going to be partial owner now. This is a bizarre, scary, freakish place we've come. And we've come here in under 2 months. And I don't know, is the market enough? Is 40 to 60% of your savings in some kind of investment vehicle enough? And for those of you that don't have any investments, for those of you that don't save your money, what is your breaking point? When do you begin to wake up, splash a little cold water in your face, and realize things don't seem to be going well? They seem to be working in a backwards fashion. We don't seem to be moving forward. That progress and change isn't coming. I mean, change is happening. I got some change in my pocket. That's about it. But it's not change for the better. How many of you, even if you haven't saved any money, are still looking over your shoulder because you're worried your company might shave you off because their profits aren't really that strong right now? Corporate America is laying off people right and left as their stocks continue to tumble. There is a correlation. So even if you think stock market, Wall Street, that's not my deal. I don't understand it. I don't have any investments. I don't care. Guess what? Your company does. And as your company's value continues to decline, guess what they do? They try to shave people off to save money. That could be you. So the fact of the matter is, whether you have money in the markets directly or whether you don't, we're all affected. And at some point, we're all going to have to wake up and realize that we all have skin in this game. It's not little D's and little R's behind our name. Markets look forward. Don't forget this. Markets always look forward. And what they see looking forward in their crystal ball? Bad news. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Chris Stigall and for Michael Savage, this is the Savage Nation, 800-449-TALK, 800-449-8255. Michael, glad to be here today. Thanks for the invite, and I appreciate you being here, too. Again, the number, 800-449-8255. Let's go to the phone, get you in here on the Savage Nation. Henry first in Virginia. I'm Chris in for Michael tonight. Henry, welcome.
Yeah, I'd like to say I enjoy listening to your program, first of all, and second of all. I think we all need to be talking about NAFTA. NAFTA started this problem about 14, 15 years ago, and that's the problem we have got. We are sending our jobs to China, Mexico. We're still doing it, and we can give the car companies all the money they need, but who's going to buy the cars? The jobs is the main issue we need to be talking about. It's kind of like the United States. It's kind of like a house. and it's got a foundation under it, and the foundation has been took out from under the house now, and the house is sitting on quicksand. So the first thing we need to do is stop NAFTA. The second thing we need to do is go back into our factories, reinvest in the old factories that's too old to do anything to, build new factories, and put our American workers back in those, the ones that can be remodeled. We need
Henry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I don't necessarily disagree with anything you're saying, but Henry, who does that? Who will go back and reinvest in those factories?
Well, we need to. Our government needs to. If not,
government now, what do you mean government needs to go back and reinvest in factories?
Well, just like we're spending money to create jobs, go back, each state go back into and reinvest in so many factories and get them up and get them going. People like Warren Buffett go back and reinvest. I mean, the jobs are still leaving right this minute.
Yeah, but Henry, do you know, actually, two things, Henry. Do you know the history of the steel in the 90s? Did you hear the brief history of steel in the 90s when they went through such a terrible time? Did you ever hear that story?
I haven't really heard, but let me tell you something. The United States is rolling.
Well, no, this is an important lesson because, Henry, what happened to the steel industry? They struggled. They had a terrible, terrible time in the 90s, and they went crawling on their hands and knees to the government at that time for bailout. The steel industry wanted government money, and the government at that time said no. And so what happened, you had all these steel companies, they literally consolidated and collapsed. You got down to 32, I believe it was, across the country, lean, mean steel companies. And many of them went private. They busted up their unions. Many of them went, in fact, there's a fantastic story I just saw not too long ago on 60 Minutes, a great story down in Arkansas, steel mill. That is, their workers are tied directly to their profit. Tied directly to their profits. That's how they earn their wages. None of the union labor stuff. Companies can and ought to be allowed to fail, to reorganize, bust up labor contracts and old school thinking, reorganize, reinvent themselves. Now, that being said, they also have to be allowed to invest capital and court investors. Do you dare, Henry, think, if you've got money out there these days, do you dare invest in anything right now that may turn a profit? Because, Henry, if and when, God forbid, God help us, I should say, our economy turns around, Henry, and you've got some money right now, do you feel inclined to throw some money at anything? Do you want to invest in anything right now? Really, tell me the truth. If you had a lot of it.
I'll tell you like this. If somebody don't invest, I mean, I'm saying, talking about Warren Buffett, anybody like it, somebody go back in these factories and start get them going. What I'm talking about stopping NAFTA. NAFTA, what we got, I listened to news last Friday afternoon.
Henry, I have to go, and I appreciate what you're saying, buddy, but the fact of the matter is foreigners that come here to get educated are going back to their home countries. Got Indians that are coming here to study medicine. Guess what? They're going back home. They see nationalized health care coming. They don't like what's on the horizon. That ain't NAFTA.
Savage.
Corner you, but well, maybe I do mean to corner you. Do you want to have a debate on that?
The approach is extremely misleading, and the scientific community has gone through this chapter and verse.
And that rounds out our cast of characters. It's a Barack Obama failed kick line. It's an Obama line instead of a chorus line. 800-449-8255. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. Michael, it's been a real thrill here to be here tonight. I'm glad you're here, too, listening to the Savage Nation. 800-449-8255. Yeah, that was Puffy. old Al Gore, who will not debate. Well, the science. What did he say? Science is it. Let me hear that again.
And I don't mean to corner you, but, well, maybe I do mean to corner you. Do you want to have a debate on that?
The approach is extremely misleading. And the scientific community has gone through this chapter and verse.
The scientific community has gone through this chapter and verse. You know, Mr. Gore, the scientific community is full of disputes to all of your claims. It is chocked full, more than ever before. Tens of thousands of scientists. Michael has done more shows, more segments, more research. He shared with you more shows than I can count. Evidence to suggest there is a marked line in the sand being drawn in the scientific community on this phony science that he's out there peddling. But of course, we all know rule number one in issues like these, you just don't debate when you're wrong. When somebody challenges you to a debate and you know you're wrong, just don't debate. It's the same thing with the fairness doctrine. It's the same thing. You know, these people, they want to be heard. They want a platform. What I have to say is relevant. It is valid. There is no disputing it. I just don't have a forum in which to talk it through with you. If only you would hand me a microphone and give me some government money, I could make the case that I am on to something quite brilliant and astute. And if someone comes up and says, oh, really? Why don't we discuss it? Why don't you come on the show? Name the time. How many times have I told you, filling in here for Michael, and how many times have you heard Michael say it? He invites people to come on this show and debate him, of all stripes, all political sides and stripes. They don't do it. They're terrified. Because when people on the radio have the freedom to open their minds and speak unmanaged, not in soundbite form, not in column form in the newspaper, the radio, again, I got to celebrate talk radio. If you'll excuse me for a minute, I got to celebrate this format. It is such a blessing to be able to do it. It is such a blessing to be able to hear Michael Savage do it so well. That's why the Savage Nation is so huge. You adore Michael Savage. You adore what he has to offer and say. Because unlike any other forum, you get free thought. You get this range of emotion. You get debate. You get discussion. You get to call in and be a part of it. It is organic, a discussion and debate format as you'll get. And Al Gore is terrified of that. Liberals in talk radio and those show hosts are terrified of that. They don't want to come on and engage and go one-on-one, mano-a-mano. They can't hang. They know they can't. They don't have the intellectual heft. They don't have the backing. And they don't care. They don't care as long as those on television and in the newspapers and some of the most widely read blogs and websites out there, as long as they provide them the cover, they don't need us. They just like to eradicate us. Talk radio is the last item. And guys like Bjorn Lundborg there, who want to debate, who challenged Al Gore in this forum recently, challenged him to a debate. Debate me, Al Gore. Oh, well, no, I'm not going to debate you. There's a general consensus now. There's no need to debate. Well, that's it. That's the point. They don't have the intellectual heft to do it. They're terrified to do it. Because if they actually had to stand on a stage and debate, they actually were on display, televised, or on the radio for a debate, they would be shown to be the charlatans they are. They don't want a debate. They want to shut out dissent. There is a difference. He's a propagandist, plain and simple. You know, nothing, reality is no longer important. I think back to, you know, Hillary's over there peddling the global warming myth, dumping on the United States, talking the silliness, Al Gore talking the silliness. The failures of Timmy the tax cheat, this administration, just a mess. And we're all told not to acknowledge it. Don't look behind the curtain. Everything's fine. Isn't this guy swell? You think back to the Clinton presidency, for instance, a series of scandal. Vince Foster, Whitewater, Filegate, Travelgate, name it. Ruby Ridge, Waco, Monica Lewinsky, name it. Pick your scandal. Those, not important. Why weren't they important? Do you remember why then we were told those weren't important? Because we were in high cotton. The economy was strong. The Clinton presidency was strong. And for all the misgivings, for all the Lewinsky activity in the Oval Office, that stuff didn't matter. That was private. That was personal. We all had a couple of bucks. Remember the dot-com boom? Everybody was fat and happy. Oh, yeah, man. Everybody had money in their wallet. So leave Bill Clinton alone. We didn't even know about such a thing as terror or terrorism, at least on a massive scale. I mean, sure, the trade centers were hit once before, but nobody really processed it like we did on 9/11. We didn't know that kind of thing. We lived in blissful ignorance. Our biggest concern was whether or not this guy was enjoying his free time with an intern. That was our biggest concern, and we were told it wasn't our concern. Moral authority didn't matter. You uppity Christian right-wingers pounded on the president because he's getting a little something on the side. I get off him. The economy's great. And that was always what we heard, too, out of the Clinton administration, right? It's the economy, stupid. It's the economy. That's how he rode in on his white steed to get the economy turned around. That's what he still takes credit for. It's the economy. Everybody was feeling good, so they left him alone, gave him a pass. However, how do you explain this? Barack Obama, his legislation, his BlackBerry, his privacy, the tax cheats he's appointed, his pledge of transparency, his pledge of responsibility, he has done the absolute opposite in under 2 months. He can't do anything unless it's written on a teleprompter. We know they've got media blacklists where they're secretly meeting regularly to call out members of the media, private citizens by name, and besmirch them and slap them around publicly to try to marginalize them. McCarthy-era stuff, Nixonian stuff. Meanwhile, our economy is in the toilet. And for some reason now, the game has changed with the press. It's not the economy, stupid. Because, hey, we've got that nice-looking, well-spoken black man as president. And, oh, by the way, he's a Democrat, so who cares about the economy? He's so cool. I want to go have a beer with him. He's slick. His wife's got great-looking arms. They have cocktail parties on Wednesdays. They're getting a Portuguese water dog, or whatever the hell that thing is called. Ugly dog, by the way. I love dogs, but why that? But given his background and the fact that he has the little D after his name, that's all the press cares about. They'll cover. They'll rationalize anything to keep him propped up, even though the very messengers, these people that are providing him cover, are losing money just like you and I. That's the interesting, odd, bizarre thing. I know that these people at CNN, Wolf Blitzer, and all these others that love this guy and are just lapping it up, I know they're losing money just the same as you and me. But for some reason, when will this sycophantic coverage break away? I don't know when. George W. Bush, if you'll recall, no matter what you thought of him, the economy, markets riding pretty high, despite some pretty tough times. He walked into a recession. There was that little issue of 9/11. It was bad. And look, Bush, that guy was a train wreck toward the tail end. There's no defending it. I'm surely not. Don't misunderstand. But there were several years there for all the misfortune, all the misgivings, all the mistakes the Bush administration made. The economy was in great shape. But now Obama, again, economy in the toilet, and that doesn't make any difference to anybody. All that matters is Obama gets this agenda of his past. Nationalize every industry, socialize medicine, raise your taxes, impose carbon taxes, cap and trade, and of course because he's got a D behind his name. That's all that matters. He's golden. Well, I'll tell you this. If Obama presided over an economy that matched George Bush's numbers, there'd be a constitutional amendment making him king for life. We'd get that Hugo Chavez term limit eradication. He'd be elected time and again and again. Can you imagine? Imagine if Barack Obama should somehow figure out how to get this economy turned around. Imagine if he'd come in and actually done Reagan-era-style tax cuts. Can you imagine if he managed to get this economy turned around with the popularity he supposedly has out there now, according to polls? Can you imagine? In some sick way, I hate to say this, but in some sick way, I suppose we should be thankful the markets are tanking to a degree, because heaven help us, how Kool-Aid crazy they'd be. I mean, I don't know how much more euphoria they can take. This is in a down market where we're all losing money. Can you imagine if we all had money in our pocket? So the press is here to help distort reality with this constant barrage of spinning and propaganda. And that's where we are, propping up failures. The Obama administration, prop up failures. That's it. American exceptionalism, dead. Mediocrity, losers, alive and well, and to be rewarded, and to be controlled. And all this is thanks to the media sellouts. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. You Obama-chanting idiots. So thanks a lot. Those of you that don't pay taxes, don't have investments, don't have any skin in the game, you're just waiting around for your government cheese. Well, how about a little thank you card? Could you at least take the time to run to Hallmark and mail us all a little thank you card? Because we're propping you up. We're paying your mortgage. Well, you better understand and you better realize there are more of us than you know that are through and tired of paying for your lunch, paying for your mortgage. We're tired of paying your freight. We're tired of propping up losers. The markets sure show it, whether any of you Obama sycophants want to realize it or not. The markets show it. And I'll call on you so-called journalists out there. James Carville under Bill Clinton told us, hey, you leave this guy's private life out of it. Things are going along swimmingly. Look at all this economic growth. It's quiet. We got peace. Everybody's got money in their pocket. .com. It's the economy, stupid. Everybody cares about the economy under Clinton. Remember that famous line? It was the economy, stupid. Well, I guess that applied for Bill Clinton, because it must not apply here. It's not the economy, stupid. I guess it's just being cool. He's got a great... Boy, if being cool were traded on the stock exchange, I suppose we'd be heavy hitters. We'd still be up there in the 16-17 range. 800-449-8255. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
So we've been exploring the characters of the Obama White House and the Obama administration, the help wanted sign in the front window of the White House. They cannot find anybody of any quality to come to work at the White House. Chris Stigall in for Michael Savage. Michael, it's been a real thrill to fill in tonight. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for being here at 800-449-8255. Let's go to the phones. You guys have been waiting patiently. I appreciate it. Joanne in Washington, D.C. You're up first. I'm Chris in for Michael on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Chris, I had originally called in to ask, since these loans are being renegotiated to lower the principal and the interest, when the housing market comes back, why can't these people be held to raise, to go back and put these, raise these loans to what they originally were, the principal, rather than just give them a free ride? And then the other thing is to have the laws that on, that I thought was on the book where you had to qualify for a loan. And that where we've gotten into this problem because of Barney Frank and, the, and Cox, because you could, they put a spin of racism on it if you wouldn't lend people money because they didn't qualify. And the last thing I want to ask you, which I think is so important, is because you're very knowledgeable and you have these resources, I want to be enlightened, but I was told that if you're born to a Muslim father, you can never change your Muslim religion under penalty of death. And I'd like to know if that is true.
Well, Joanne, I'm honestly, on this issue, on that particular question, I'm not qualified. I couldn't tell you that. I don't know. I mean, I certainly could look it up. I'll see if that's true. And if what you're alluding to, of course, is Barack Obama's father was a Muslim. Are you asserting then that your concern is that somehow his allegiance is still to that faith? Is that what you're suggesting, if that's true?
I'm not asserting that. I'm just... What I'm questioning is if this is what Islam is all about, then I'm just curious how he could have changed his and become a Christian. I don't know, but that's what.
Well, Joe, you know the thing. I guess the question, the broader question, I would ask Joanne, and this is something I would like to know. You know, regardless of that relationship. And I appreciate the phone call. It is the very valid question. The basic question is, do you care? Do you care about the man's personal faith? You know, Obama, to me, whether he's a Muslim or not, isn't necessarily even the primary issue. The fact is, he's an authoritarian. That's the problem. He's a socialist and a Marxist first. I don't know that his loyalty is to any religion at all. That's the thing. Because religions, you have to see the thing to me, Joanne. Because I consider myself a man of faith, struggle with it, of course, like we all do. And I work on it all the time. But I respect it. I hold it dear. I pray regularly. I want desperately to be accepted in my Christian faith. And it comes before me. And with that, there is an air of humility in my being that I always keep top of mind. I'm here. I'm on the radio. I'm blessed to talk to you and be with you. And have this opportunity to fill in for Michael. It has nothing to do with me. It's God-given. It's God-driven. That's the way I feel about my life. And I think for most people that have a faith, a deep, abiding faith in their life, whatever it may be, I think most people are driven that way. There is a humility that makes them realize the places, the things they've achieved and done, it is not driven by them. That's why this man bothers me so much. I don't see anything in him but authoritarian. I don't see anything in him that suggests to me a humility, a deeper belief in something that's bigger than him. He seems to believe he's the biggest thing in the room. He seems to believe his solutions, his way, his government is the biggest solution to our daily needs. Besides the tertiary God bless America at the end of a speech, I don't know what he believes about his faith. You know, he's a guy that loves to give big produced speeches about his faith or about his, his race, for instance, during the campaign or about the economy. But I've never heard him give a real speech on faith. I've never really heard him tell me what does he believe? What drives him? What motivates him? What does he believe in? How did he get to become president of the United States? I don't mean literally. I mean, does he believe there's something bigger than him? I don't see it. He's just not a guy that looks humble to me. He doesn't look like a guy that believes there's anything bigger than him. So his religion to me, I'm not certain it's central. In fact, we talked about this a lot. And again, I'm not saying if the guy were an atheist, as long as he said so, at least we'd know. The problem is we don't know. It's just another part of him we don't know or understand. The only thing about his faith-based background we do know was Jeremiah Wright and 20 years in that church. And he's disassociated supposedly himself from that. If you can believe it, I don't. Some people bought into it. But what I saw in this man on the campaign trail and after he was elected, trips to Hawaii and the gym every weekend, every Sunday. The guy's religion seemed to be basketball and working out and being shirtless in the surf and that sort of thing. I don't know. Does he attend church regularly? Does it matter to you? I don't know. It does to me. But I'm a guy who just likes to know that my leaders have a foundational core that is bigger than government, bigger than them. I don't know that he has it. And I think most Americans believe what I'm telling you right now. I believe most Americans want a president who has a big basic belief in something bigger than them. I'm not convinced. Be it Muslim, be it Jewish, be it atheist, be it Catholic, Christian, whatever. I don't think he's got it. His religion is his government. His religion is his leadership. Seems to me. I appreciate you being here. My name is Chris Stigall, in for Michael Savage. Michael, again, thanks a lot. Hope to see you again soon. This is the Savage Nation. Have a great weekend.